Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, October 12, 2016. With me today, I have Kelly Gumont. And how are you, Kelly?
I'm well, Jeff. How are you?
I am doing great. And John Martellaro, how are you?
I'm good. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
It's
great to have both of you on the show. We might as well just hop in because it's the three of us and I know how that goes. So we'll just do it. Okay. So the deal is...
The fastest 20 minutes on Earth.
I know. It just flies by. Okay. So here's the deal. Amazon just launched their own streaming music service called Amazon Music Unlimited. And I'm sure some people are doing their head cocked to the side sort of thing, where they are wondering what I'm talking about, because Amazon already has a streaming music service as part of Amazon Prime. This is a new thing, and this is a service that is going to cost you $9.99 a month, and you get access to several million songs. And you can get discount prices, though. So if you are a Prime member, then the service costs $7.99. If you have an Amazon Echo, or if you've pre-ordered your Amazon Echo Dot, or no, it's just the Amazon Dot. Is that right, or is it Echo Dot?
Just the dot.
So it's the short, stubby Echo that doesn't have the better speakers built into it. If you have the... what's the button? Is that called Amazon Tap? Where you push the button and it just magically orders products for you? If you have any of those devices, then the service costs you $3.99 a month. So,
wow.
Yeah, so Amazon has this service here that price-wise is... undercutting everyone else. The catch is, to get that $3.99 price, you can use the streaming music service with a single Amazon Echo or single Amazon Dot. If you want to use it with more devices, then that takes you up to the $7.99 a month price point.
My head already hurts.
Okay, yeah, the pricing is really confusing, or at least really complex. And we didn't even get into the proposed family plans, which haven't launched yet. So that will add more to that mix.
Well, it gets confusing even from the right out of the gate, because as a Prime member, I already have a streaming service that comes with Prime. Mm-hmm. So now they're trying to tell me that there's a whole nother thing and that I'm not getting the experience I could be getting out of Amazon, because that just seems weird to me. So I don't know why. This is one of those things like with the Kindle Fire, where like every time they come out with a new one, it's still just a Kindle Fire, and it's really hard to tell what you have and don't have, and you know, particularly if you're trying to get help with something and you want to make sure you're using the right words in order to get help with the thing that you actually have, it gets really complex in a hurry. And so far, like, I was a little bit interested when I heard that Amazon had their own streaming service, just because I was curious how it might work with, like I said, the Prime account at my house. But I'm getting a little less excited about it when I hear how it's all going to break down. Like, what am I actually going to be paying? And it doesn't sound like there's a clear answer.
I read an article a while back that talked about the carrier plans, and it said that when you have a large number of different plans, different costs, so many different options that it's confusing, revenue is maximized.
That's fascinating. Huh.
Hmm. Well, it's the gym membership model.
This is why I go to the YMCA, because it's one flat price.
Let me scoop the money out of your account every month, and it's easier for you to just let the money go than it is for you to call me and try and cancel. So I keep getting your money whether or not you show up.
Yeah, that's true. I have a couple ideas on what's going on with Apple, or excuse me, Amazon Music Unlimited. And the first thing, Kelly, I think that what you're really paying for with Amazon Music Unlimited over what you're getting with your Prime membership is more music.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. It's just more music. That's how it looks to me right now. I'm doing more research, and I'll let you guys know for certain, but that's how it looks for me right now. And then I think the rest of it breaks down to, it doesn't matter what Amazon is charging, they want to make it more convenient for you to stay inside their ecosystem than to leave. And if you're watching your TV shows and movies, by the way, Man in the High Castle starts up again on December 16th. Set your timers, people.
It also kind of reminds me of the megahertz wars of the 90s. Remember, if my CPU was 1 megahertz and yours was 800, then mine was faster than yours, and so it was better in every respect. And so if you see this number like, oh, 10 million versus 2 million, you go, oh, it's got to be better, even though you can't listen to a fraction of that in your lifetime. It must be better.
I'm sure that that will be a draw for some people. But I think the big thing is Amazon wants to make it more convenient for people mm-hmm. to stay inside the Amazon ecosystem than to hop out. If you're using right. Spotify or Apple Music to listen to all your music, but you're watching your shows through Amazon Prime, well, you're leaving mm-hmm. Amazon Prime to go listen to your music. And Amazon doesn't want that. They want you to stay inside their happy little walled garden. Mm. And mm-hmm. I think that's what this is all about. And it doesn't need to be a service that's better. It just needs to be more convenient. Right. And
because inertia is powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's I think, has been a big player in Apple Music becoming so successful. You already mm-hmm. have access to it on everything you're buying from Apple. So it's mm-hmm. easy to get into that system. And Amazon wants to do the same thing. They're already doing it. They just want to patch up the holes where people are slipping back out. And streaming music is one of those places.
Maximizing revenue.
Yeah.
Precisely. Yeah.
So are you guys going to try it out?
I have Amazon Prime, and I watch Amazon Prime videos, but I haven't gotten around to listening to music yet because I'm still have a warm place in my heart for my playlists on iTunes, and I buy my music that I like.
How about you, Kelly?
So,
well, we have an Echo at my house, so because I can get a deal on it, maybe we'll try it out.
You can do a free trial also.
Yeah, I still like... I mean, for like a couple of months, like it wouldn't be a big deal because Mr. Kelly listens to Pandora a lot and I listen to Spotify a lot. So with Spotify sort of coming to an end on the desktop anyway because of Flash, there may be an opportunity there. I have a similar stance to John in that... I never got in a whole lot into any of the streaming services because a lot of what I like to listen to isn't there. So I can't put on an album that I enjoy, you know, if I'm in the mood to listen to something in particular, because it probably doesn't exist on any of these services. So there's a certain amount of that that goes into it for me as well. So I have some more basic playlists, like a film score one that I use, you know, during the day when I'm listening to stuff. Mm-hmm. And that might be something that I could try out and see kind of how the AI behind those sorts of radio stations works. I think it'll be interesting to see in the larger scheme of things what actually happens with this service in particular. It may do any number of things. It may cause a bunch of people to flock to Amazon. It may sell hardware, which we know is what they want to do. you know, just like anybody else, they want people to buy what they make. And it could be something where it just shines a light on Prime Music because people will go, oh, I didn't even realize this was a perk of my Prime account. I just like the shipping. And maybe they will discover that they have access to this other thing and that that's good enough. Maybe it will bring a whole new wave of people to the streaming music marketplace. Like, we don't know how this is going to go, but I'm always excited to see somebody doing something where they go up against Apple, because it sort of makes me feel like now it's Apple's turn to convince those people who are $10 a month customers to actually stay with their service. What are they going to do to make that compelling? Or what is Spotify going to do to make that compelling? And I want to see what that is, because so far I've not been compelled to pay for any of them. I tried Apple Music on the trial and I was okay with it going away.
Okay. And I suppose I should answer the question since I posed it. And my answer is, I'm going to wait until my Amazon Dot shows up. And then I'll plug speakers into that. And I will do the trial just to experience it. My expectation is that when I'm done with the trial, that I won't continue to pay for it, because the music that I listen to through Amazon Prime is pretty limited anyhow. So I don't think I would be getting any real benefit from there. And I'm paying for Apple Music.
Right.
And I think that Amazon Music Unlimited will actually be really successful. And I think it's going to be successful because there are already so many people that are in the Prime game and in the Amazon system that they will use it because it's there, much like people sign up for Apple Music because it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the convenience thing. So, listeners, I'm curious, are you all excited about Amazon Music Unlimited? Let me know, because, like I've said many times before, I really, really want to know what you think. You can send me tweets. That would be at TMO Daily. You can send me emails. That would be observations@macobserver.com. And you can leave comments in the show notes. I'm going to check all those places to see what you have to say. And we, I think, kind of need to do a follow-up to yesterday. So yesterday's show, we wrapped up with of what became kind of a morality question, and also just a flat out sex question. And we, so yesterday John was on with me, Amber and Chaffin was on, and we were talking about sex and robots and
the ethics
and the ethics. And we kind of wrapped up with me asking if we would have sex with robots. And John's answer was no, because he has no need for that.
He's
happily married. And Brian's answer was probably not, and certainly not if he was in a relationship. And my answer was, yeah, I'd check this out and let you guys know what it's all about. And we didn't really get to dive deeper into the whole morality side of like a serious human interaction with artificial intelligences. And what got us thinking about talking about this today was the fact that HBO's Westworld is happening, and it's apparently a pretty compelling show.
Boy howdy is it happening.
Yeah, and in the show, there's a lot of human and android interaction, and so now here we are with a scenario that's playing out as a drama on television, but also has the potential to be a real life scenario to some degree. For us, I don't think Westward specifically, but having more intimate interactions with artificial intelligences and artificially constructed bodies and other devices. And is this a problem?
The other day, I was exchanging some email with the science fiction writer David Brin, and we started talking about my idea about having classifications of artificial intelligence agents, starting with class one being like Siri 2016, class two being a young person with access to the internet, class three might be something like Watson or HAL 9000, and you work your way up until you get to Skynet. And the question is, as these artificial intelligence agents are built into androids, and as the AI intelligence and sensitivity and humanness evolves, at what point does it become criminal action to do certain things, like, you know, turn it off, box it up, ship it back, I'm done with it, or to abuse it in some way? You can start with blow up dowels, you know, that are plastic, and when you're done with it, you know, you deflate it and put it in a closet. But what about when the AI agent is suddenly is class five or six and has become dependent on you as you are on it? All sorts of ethical issues arise there too.
Well, if you're creating an artificial intelligence, is it possible, do you think, to narrow the scope of its function? So, like, if we're talking about yesterday, the part of the discussion was a sex surrogate robot. Or
yeah,
Android.
Doctor's prescription for health reasons, right?
Sure. And could you not program the artificial intelligence so that it understands its function as a sexual surrogate and does not have any problems with that because that's all it knows?
Well, you might get into a situation where the sexual surrogate is trying to bring the patient back to health, and in so doing that, you know, goes into a denial mode where you're forcing the patient to understand sensitivity about other beings. And that could be self-defeating in the sense that you just described it. See what I'm saying? There's a fine line there between making it completely compliant and then also having it be sophisticated enough to have a mind of its own, to be a pleasing partner and to help you with the surrogacy. So that's a challenge.
Yes, it is. And there have been so many movies where they touch on this in some way. And mm-hmm. and typically, it just goes horribly wrong. And I'm wondering, is that what the future of artificial intelligence will be for us, where it just goes horribly wrong? Or is this something where we should give ourselves more credit and know that we can, or assume that we can, create code that fosters artificial intelligence in a way that benefits us without creating these other problems?
Well, in Friday's particle debris, I hypothesized that corporations would start with, you know, small, friendly, intelligent agents like Siri and Cortana, and it would evolve, and they would become commercially available and become more powerful. And even while Watson is helping greatly with oncology, cancer research, it could be that artificial intelligence agents could also be pressed into service on robocalls, for example, where it has access to a billion phone calls and it's psychologically fine-tuned to be able to sell you anything. And the question is, should a class five intelligent agent be allowed to even talk to a human being? And if there's money to be made, yes, they will. And if you have trouble resisting a human caller trying to sell you aluminum siding, how much more helpless will you be talking to an extremely sophisticated AI agent who uses nuances of the human voice and psychological training and access to historical databases? And should there be legislation that says these agents can't talk to you without your own artificial agent surrogate, sort of being the translator or the intermediary to protect you from yourself.
That doesn't sound nearly as exciting as a sex robot.
No. So one of the things that I thought was really interesting, I am watching Westworld, and I have to say the empty part of my life that is empty until Game of Thrones comes back is being very nicely serviced by Westworld. And one of the things that's really interesting to me about it is, on a larger scale, sort of what it says about entertainment in, like, the future. Because, you know, we like to joke about living in the future. And the guests, the people who come to this theme park, which is what it is a theme park, are paying a truckload of money for the experience. That it's mentioned more than one time, you know, like, it better look good for what we're, you know, for the price we're paying and things like that. And one of the things that happened in the second episode, there's only two so far, and I'm not giving anything away because this is just a brief interaction between these two people. There's a guest at the park, and he's talking to one of the someone who is a host who meets him at the train and takes him to this area where he gets to go enter the park. And she's very pretty, and she says to him, I know you want to ask, so go ahead and ask. And he says, "Are you real?" And she says, "If you can't tell, does it matter?" And I remember having, like, we were watching it, and I had to pause right there and be like, "Whoa, like this, like it, these are some really interesting questions, especially in 2016, in the age that we live in, where you can have a reasonably interactive conversation with an AI construct that lives in your phone or in a speaker on the counter in the kitchen. You know, Jeff, you'll get there in the next couple of days, I'm sure.
On October 25th.
Oh, okay. So these are things that, like, these are things that are unbelievably likely in our lifetimes, because you can already have a conversation with something like Watson. You know, they turned him loose on Jeopardy. And, you know, and it's one of those things where it starts to become, I think, a very, very sticky question. But so far, like, as a piece of storytelling, like, let me just tell you, I cannot recommend Westworld enough. It's everything I liked about all of the things that the people who are involved in creating it did before. Because it's J.J. Abrams and Jonathan Nolan, and Jonathan Nolan's wife, whose name escapes me at the moment. But all the stuff that I've seen of theirs in the past has all been stuff I enjoyed. So all the things about the first couple seasons of Lost that were great, and like the peeling back of layers and how's everything connected and what makes all of this work and the mystery behind a bunch of stuff that's happening. And then there's like this other element that is screwing everything up and trying to turn it upside down. And how does that work? And, you know, what does that mean for the rest of what's happening in the story?
Kelly, and do you think every that these scene, fictionalized accounts inform us or simply entertain us? I mean, a lot of science fiction in the past has simply been, you know, little green bug-eyed monsters for entertainment purposes. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of science fiction has been excessively informing in the way 2001: A Space Odyssey was. So what do you think about Westworld in that regard?
There's inform, and there's... I feel like what Westworld is doing right now is to bring it back to what Jeff was talking about earlier. I think it's continuing a conversation that people started with Battlestar Galactica when we met Six. And, you know, and it turned out that she was, you know, she had feelings and opinions and was doing things that weren't necessarily related to, you know, whatever it was that the base star wanted her to do. And finding out, you know, and then finding out later that there were other people who it turned out actually were Cylons. And like, I think this is continuing that conversation of sort of, you know, what is real? Like when you look at, you know, like they said in Westworld, if you can't tell, does it matter? And there's a very I think there's a very interesting conversation to be had about it. I don't know how much it's informing me as much as it is making me really stop and think, because this was something that I have been turning over in my mind since I watched the second episode. And I've watched both of them more than one time, because every time you see it again, you peel back another layer of, like, I know how this turns out. And so knowing that, I see all these other little things that are happening in the meantime. And I think what I hope is that more of a conversation comes out of this, that people will think about this more, and it will start more of a conversation about things like artificial intelligence and where that kind of thing is going, and a little bit more about us as people. Because one of the things that I see a lot as a recurring theme, particularly in some of the sci-fi I enjoy, is that like a fundamental choice that will unbelievably change the tone of everything that's happening comes down to one person. And can they make a good decision, a smart decision, a calm, informed decision? Or are they going to be a person and be trigger happy and do something that makes everything worse? And almost every time the person does the thing that would make things worse. And I kind of hope that is something that gets explored a little bit in Westworld. I'm super excited to see where it goes, and I hope this isn't the last time we get a chance to talk about it, because a few more episodes in, I think it's only going to be better.
Well, my consolation in cutting us off right now is that there are future shows, and I have no doubt we'll be coming back to topics like this at some point. So, Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Yes, you're more than welcome. It was my pleasure.
And John, thank you for being here too.
You're very welcome.
Listeners, thank you for joining us, and keep giving me your feedback, because I do love hearing what you guys have to say. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.